Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're grappling with a really big question, maybe one of the most important for the 21st century. How do we actually structure society when technology allows for these huge decentralized ways of organizing?
Yeah, it's a massive shift.
Exactly. And we're diving deep into Collaborative Society by Alexandra Przelyska and Darius Jemielniak. It's a book that, well, it basically says the way we're doing things now, fundamentally broken. But crucially, the fixes are within our reach.
And this deep dive is, I think, essential because it just fundamentally challenges the story we've been told for the last, what, decade?
Right, the whole sharing economy narrative.
Exactly. We've been living in this age of the so-called sharing economy, but the authors argue, quite persuasively, that that name is, well, that's a calculated myth.
A myth? How so? Well, we're not really sharing resources in the way that term implies. We're living under something they identify, I think correctly, as platform capitalism.
Platform capitalism, okay.
So our mission today, really, is to understand how we can move beyond that model, which is often quite extractive, and instead use technology intentionally, purposefully, to build social structures that actually maximize genuine human collaboration and, you know, shared value.
I really like that focus. Intentional design, not just letting things happen or, worse, accidental exploitation. It sounds like a roadmap.
It is.
Okay, but before we get into the heavy lifting of the book itself, let's talk about the authors, because their combination of expertise seems, well, pretty unique.
Oh, it's a remarkable synergy, truly. First up, we have Alexandra Przelyska. She's a professor, specializes in AI, human-computer interaction, organizational behavior. Quite the list.
Wow.
And she's also a research associate at the MIT Center for Collective Intelligence.
So she brings that real cutting-edge tech perspective, the philosophical side, maybe. I read she's focused on things like machine learning, conversational AI, but always asking about the soft side of technology.
Exactly. How it changes us, our identity, our relationships. That's her focus.
Okay.
And then she's perfectly complemented by Darius Jemielniak.
Yeah.
He's a professor of management and also a faculty associate over at Harvard's Berkman Klein Center.
Ah, Berkman Klein. Okay.
Yeah. And he brings this incredibly grounded empirical reality check. He spent years doing ethnographic research, basically, studying groups in their natural setting.
Right. Like an anthropologist, but for organizations.
Precisely. Looking at how massive decentralized collaboration actually functions in the real world. His big work was on Wikipedia, for instance.
Wikipedia. Okay, that makes sense. So you've got the deep technical futurist, maybe the philosopher of AI, paired with the organizational anthropologist who studies how these massive online communities actually work or don't work.
Exactly. So they can critique the failures of today's platforms, like, say, Uber.
Yeah, which they do.
Oh, yes. But they also understand exactly how successful large-scale, non-commercial, human cooperation like Wikipedia is already working. They're not just dreaming, they're evidence-based.
Right, not utopian, but practical, based on what's already proven possible.
Precisely, and that balance lets them move past just criticizing and actually provide, you know, practical blueprints.
Which leads us, I think, straight into the book's core argument. And it starts with a pretty devastating critique of where we are right now.
Yeah, it pulls no punches. Right from the start, they state that this whole sharing economy idea, it's mostly just a polished up version of platform capitalism.
Platform capitalism. Let's unpack that.
Think about the big names. Uber, maybe Airbnb.
Yeah.
Are they really about sharing in the communal sense? The authors say no. They're highly centralized intermediaries.
Middlemen.
Ultimate middlemen, yeah. Using sophisticated algorithms to manage and really control a new class of workers who are often in very precarious situations.
Okay.
And all the while, they're extracting rent, basically a fee, from every single transaction. The wealth, it pools right at the top with the platform owners.
Leaving the actual providers, the drivers or hosts?
With the costs, the risks, and the insecurity, yeah.
That's the key distinction, isn't it? The platform slips in, becomes essential, captures the value, but pushes the costs and risks onto the individual worker.
Exactly.
But hang on, if that model platform capitalism is so incredibly effective, I mean, look how fast these companies grew. How can genuine collaboration ever hope to compete with that kind of extractive efficiency?
Oh, well, it's not just a critique, it's a vision.
Okay.
They argue that technology must be intentionally designed for cooperation, to build what they call thick trust, We'll get into that later, and genuine shared value.
Right.
The core problem, as they see it, isn't really the technology itself. It's this huge tension between how fast tech is evolving and how slowly our institutions, our laws, our organizations, our social norms are adapting.
So our structures are stuck in the past, basically, like industrial age thinking.
Pretty much. Organized around top-down control, hierarchy, while the tech enables something totally different.
Okay, so the book is really a challenge then to leaders, managers, us as citizens, to actively shape this transformation. We can't just wait for Silicon Valley to sort it out for us.
Absolutely not. We have to design these resilient, equitable systems ourselves, whether that's in our economy, our politics, even education.
Okay, let's dig into that problem side a bit more first. To really hammer home what's wrong with the current model, they really zero in on Uber, don't they, as the kind of quintessential negative example.
You do. It's the epitome of platform capitalism, where the algorithmic management system basically acts as the boss in the cloud.
A boss in the cloud.
And it's a boss that, you know, never sleeps, never takes a coffee break, and crucially, never really has to justify its decisions in a human way.
Right.
They detail the extreme precarity this creates. We're talking lack of benefits, wildly unstable income, and this constant underlying psychological anxiety.
That your entire livelihood is basically held hostage by an app on your phone, by a piece of software.
Precisely. And here's where the control gets really insidious. The rating system.
Ah, the 5 stars.
Yeah. As the worker, you're essentially forced into this state of perpetual, hyper-compliant emotional labor. You know, always smiling, always going the extra mile, just to keep that rating up.
Because if you don't.
If you drop too low, you face deactivation, which is basically the digital equivalent of being fired instantly.
Mm-hmm.
No warning, no severance, often no real appeal process.
Wow. So it's centralized control, just masked as decentralized flexibility.
That's a perfect way to put it, yeah.
Okay, so if that's the nightmare scenario technology designed for total control and extraction, where do Perdigaska and Jim Yelmeniak find the proof that, you know, genuine collaboration can actually work at scale?
Right. So they pivot. They say, look, let's shift our view of AI. Stop seeing it just as a tool for control and start seeing it as a tool for augmentation, for partnership. Yeah, they introduced this idea of cooperative bots or collaborative AI.
Okay, what does that actually look like in practice? If you're optimizing for collective benefit instead of extraction, what do these bots do?
Well, think of them as organizational facilitators, maybe. Instead of, you know, digitally firing people, a bot might summarize a really complex multi-day online discussion down to its core points of consensus.
Oh, that would be useful.
Wouldn't it? Or it could highlight the specific areas where people still disagree, saving human managers potentially hundreds of hours of reading time.
Okay.
Or they could detect escalating conflicts in online forums early on, so a human mediator could step in before things blow up. Or they might help fairly allocate shared resources in a cooperatively owned system, like a tool library or something.
So the tech helps us coordinate better, manage information.
Exactly. It augments our ability to work together, but crucially, humans retain the ultimate control over the important decisions.
But wait a second. The technology behind Uber, that's just code too, isn't it? What actually prevents a cooperative bot from being, I don't know, subtly reprogrammed by someone to become the next extractive algorithm? Is the difference just philosophy, or is there something technical, something structural?
That is absolutely the core question. And the answer, according to the authors, is governance and ownership. It's not just the code. It's who controls the code and who benefits from it.
Governance and ownership. Okay.
Which brings them directly to their key positive case study. The big example of hope.
Let me guess. Wikipedia.
You got it. The Wiki model.
Okay.
Wikipedia, they argue, demonstrates beyond doubt that massive, valuable, non-commercial global collaboration is absolutely possible.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing when you think about it.
It really is, but it requires intentionally designed governance. It doesn't just happen by magic.
So how does Wikipedia manage it? How do they maintain quality, often better than, say, traditional encyclopedias or even some corporate media, without a CEO dictating things or, you know, legions of paid editors?
Well, it doesn't rely on that top-down hierarchy at all. It relies on distributed vigilance, everyone kind of watching out.
Distributed vigilance.
And strong, transparent community norms.
Hmm.
Things like neutrality, citing sources. Quality control is managed through really intensive tier review. And there's this blend of like meritocracy and what they call emergent bureaucracy.
Emergent bureaucracy?
Yeah, where influence and roles are earned through consistent, helpful contributions over time, not just given by a title. It's complex, definitely, but it's a self-healing system built on a shared purpose, not shared profit.
Right. And these principles, they argue, aren't just for building online encyclopedias. They can apply to our economy, our politics.
Absolutely. Which is why they highlight the growing movement towards platform cooperatives.
Platform co-ops. So taking the tech idea, but changing the ownership structure.
Exactly. If venture capital-backed platforms are often extracted by design, platform co-ops aim to be restorative. They give examples like Stocksy.
Oh, the stock photo site.
Yeah, owned by its artists. Or Fermondo, which is an ethical marketplace in Europe owned by its users and sellers. They combine the efficiency of a platform technology with democratic ownership and control.
So the value that the network creates actually stays with the people creating the value.
That's the goal, yeah.
And what about politically? We often think digital governance just means, you know, clicking a button to vote online, but they seem to suggest much more sophisticated models are possible.
Oh, definitely. They look at examples from digital communities, like the Debian project, which manages a huge open source operating system,
right,
but also real world civic experiments. They spend some time detailing Taiwan's VTaiwan initiative.
VTaiwan? What's that?
It's fascinating. It's not just an online suggestion box. It uses digital tools to facilitate really large scale public deliberation on complex, often controversial policies.
Like what?
Well, like how to regulate ride sharing services, for instance. The platform gathers diverse input, uses AI to visualize areas of consensus and disagreement, and helps generate concrete policy recommendations that politicians have actually committed to reviewing and responding to. So it makes digital participation meaningful. It moves beyond just passive voting towards active, informed co-creation of policy.
That sounds much more empowering.
It really does.
Okay, so if we try to connect these blueprints, these examples, back to the bigger picture, what are the key takeaways, the core themes we should really internalize from the book?
I think it distills down into maybe three critical themes that you, listening right now, can use immediately to sort of reassess how you engage with the digital world.
Okay, theme number one.
Theme one is the one we keep circling back to, the misnomer. You really have to internalize that the sharing economy is largely platform capitalism.
Get that label right in your head.
Yes. And as a consumer, or maybe as a worker using these platforms, this forces you to analyze every interaction. Ask yourself, is this platform actually fostering a collaborative relationship? Or is it primarily designed to extract rent and potentially drive precarity for someone else?
That's a tough but important question to ask. Okay, theme two.
Theme number two is trust as infrastructure. This is crucial. They show that the success of any collaborative system depends on building thick trust.
Thick trust. You mentioned that earlier. How is it different from, say, my Uber rating?
Right. That Uber rating is what they might call thin trust. It's easily gained, often based on coercion, that fear of deactivation we talked about. Thick trust, on the other hand, is built intentionally through transparency, real accountability, and a shared sense of identity or purpose within a community. It's much more robust.
And that matters in our daily lives too, right? Like in the workplace, thin trust might be that mandatory anonymous annual employee survey.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas thick trust is genuine psychological safety in your team, where people feel safe enough to disagree productively, to point out problems without fearing they'll be punished or, you know, digitally deactivated from the project.
That takes real investment in relationships, not just transactions.
Right. Okay. And the third theme.
And finally, theme number three, human agency in algorithmic systems. This is a passionate argument in the book for what they call human-AI symbiosis.
Working with AI, not just being managed by it.
Precisely. We have to demand that AI design serves human flourishing, that it enhances our capabilities, maybe filtering information overload, suggesting useful connections, helping manage shared resources fairly. But humans must retain ultimate control over the critical decisions, the ones that really affect people's livelihoods, their well-being, the direction of society. We need ethical design.
It's striking how they use language to capture these complex dynamics. The book seems full of memorable phrases. Maybe we could pull out a few core ideas, sort of paraphrased quotes that really encapsulate their message.
Absolutely. There are some really powerful concepts. One that stood out to me is this idea that collaboration is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of productive disagreement.
Ah, okay. So conflict isn't necessarily bad.
Not at all, according to them. Effective systems don't try to eliminate competing ideas or smooth everything over. They find ways to channel that conflict constructively. If managed well, disagreement is actually a sign of healthy engagement, not system failure.
That makes sense. It avoids groupthink. Okay, what's another one?
Another key idea focuses more on the system design itself. The most successful collaborative systems are those that make cooperation easier than competition.
Easier than competition? How does that work?
It means you don't just rely on people being purely altruistic, which isn't always sustainable. Instead, you design the incentives, the defaults, the workflows, so that acting in your own rational self-interest also happens to align with achieving the collective goal.
You make it objectively less hassle or more rewarding to share and cooperate than it is to hoard or compete destructively.
Exactly. Align incentives. And maybe a third one. It addresses that crucial ethical balance we talked about, especially in decentralized systems. Trust at scale requires transparency, but transparency without accountability becomes mere surveillance.
Ooh, that's powerful. Explain that a bit.
Well, you need transparency so people can see how the system works, who's doing what.
Yeah.
But if everything is monitored and visible, yet there's no mechanism to hold the system or powerful actors accountable when things go wrong or rules are broken,
then transparency just becomes a tool for control, for oppression.
Precisely. It becomes surveillance without recourse. So legitimacy, real trust, requires maintaining that delicate balance between transparency and accountability.
Okay, these are really thought-provoking ideas. Let's try to get concrete now. If you're listening to this, maybe you're a manager, a team lead, just anyone working in an organization today. How do you actually take these blueprints, these ideas, and apply them starting tomorrow?
Yeah, good question. I think the biggest practical shift is moving away from rewarding only the lone wolf hero, the individual star performer.
Right, the person who hits their numbers but maybe doesn't help anyone else.
Exactly. So if you're a manager, focus on creating ways to measure and reward what they call thick collaboration. For example, maybe implement a quarterly peer contribution metric.
Peer contribution.
Yeah, something that factors in how much someone shared knowledge across teams or mentored junior colleagues. Make that kind of collaborative support a recognized, measurable part of performance reviews, promotions, maybe even compensation, not just some vague, unrewarded soft skill.
Make it count. Okay, what about on a more personal level, for us as individuals?
Well, we can all make a conscious choice to become contributors, not just passive consumers, of the digital commons. You could, you know, actually edit a Wikipedia page on a topic you know about.
Or contribute a small fix to an open source software tool you use every day.
Exactly. Or maybe join a local platform co-op if there's one starting in your area. And crucially, it means actively learning and practicing the skill of facilitating productive disagreement, rather than just avoiding tough conversations or conflicts.
That's a skill in itself, definitely, and civically, for our communities.
Civically, I think it starts with asking hard questions about the technology our local institutions are using. Who owns the platform that manages, say, parking permits or community consultations? Is it owned by the community itself, serving local needs?
Or is it just feeding data and profits to some external corporation?
Right. And look for opportunities to maybe implement genuinely collaborative tools, perhaps using something like the Ushahidi model for local crisis response coordination, or setting up simple platforms for neighborhood-level decision-making. Ensure the software serves the public, not just shareholders somewhere else.
This has been, a really fascinating deep dive. If you had to boil it down, what's the core final lesson we should take away from collaborative society?
For me, the core lesson is one of cautious optimism, maybe. The shift towards a truly collaborative society powered by technology isn't some distant futuristic fantasy. It's right. Actually an achievable goal.
Achievable how?
It's rooted in governance models and structures that already exist and work like Wikipedia, like platform co-ops. It just requires us to make conscious, active design choices, to demand institutional reform where needed, and importantly, to cultivate the political will to prioritize collective benefit over purely extractive platform growth.
So it's not inevitable, but it is possible if we choose to build it.
That's the message.
Yeah.
The book is both a sharp critique and, I think, a genuinely practical guide.
And the final thought I'll leave you, the listener, with is this. Maybe the biggest challenge in building this collaborative future isn't really mastering the technology itself. We're getting pretty good at that. Mm. Perhaps the harder part is overcoming our own cultural inertia, this deep-seated hyper-individualism in many societies, and mastering the difficult, subtle, very human skill of building and maintaining that thick trust within these new kinds of digital institutions. that might be the real work ahead. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.